And Hezbollah, I think a lot of people don't realize, and I think the media did not really expose, has very deep roots, social roots in southern Lebanon. I mean, they are in many ways a social service organization. I'm not saying that's all they are, but they have attracted a lot of local support, because if someone loses their job, groceries show up on their doorstep the next day, courtesy of Hezbollah. Now that the fighting is over, Hezbollah has already been handing out checks for, you know, compensating people for the loss of their property and doing other things to help compensate and ease people's return back to their homes. So the underlying dynamic in Lebanon, we haven't dealt with at all. I mean, we're making provisions to try to keep a lid on the active violence, and that's a good thing. What we need, though, is a much deeper sort of holistic kind of support for Lebanon as a country that is trying to make a transition to democracy, but it's a weak government, not, you know, uncharacteristically so at this stage of its development, and they need a lot of support, economic as well as political, and also for sort of social services and things. But what we need to see the international community do is to bring those things in. But unfortunately, the media's attention tends to wane once the troops are not there, the bombs are not falling, and the missiles, the rockets are not being fired. So the question really is the staying power of the media's attention and sort of the depth of that attention, that it's not just focused on the presence of violence, how many casualties were there in a particular day, but is actually dealing with some of the deeper problems that affect Lebanon and affect Israel.
And that's what you were talking about earlier with me about the many different forms that take place in the peace process, and the different agents that help with that.
Right, right. I mean, we talk about peace process. It's not just the negotiation process. It's the process of rebuilding the structures within the society, rebuilding the social fabric in the society or between the societies, helping the leaders in those countries, both the national level leaders as well as the local leaders, deal with their conflicts nonviolently, so that when there is a difference of opinion, a dispute, if someone feels threatened, we don't want the first response to be to engage in violence, right? That's what we're trying to prevent, and we need to strengthen people's ability to deal with these questions in nonviolent ways.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Protest, Profit, and Peace with guests Helena White, Mike Wyatt, Jody Dodd, and Robert Ricigliano. Sprouts is distributed by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer was MJ LaPlay with assistance from Nathan Moore. I'm Sarah Brown at WORT Community Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. See you next week on Sprouts.
Coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned.
second hand, a Saturday night special, nah. Downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capuleto that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks as the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara streets, and beautiful Latinos strut by on 16 in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no fucking Mexican zone.
And welcome to another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Today is the 24th of August, 2006. I'm Robert Norris, and this is your show, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Call in number 427-3772. If you want to get in touch, special guests scheduled to be coming up include Joe Williams, local guitarista, not seen on the streets for a while, but also involved in the anti-war movement and the draft counseling movement, as well as the man he's inviting with him, Stephen Dunifer, Free Radio Santa Cruz, no, Free Radio Berkeley, the original, or is it Liberation Radio Berkeley? It's one of them radios. He was actually the grandpa of the free radio movement in the 90s and helped to pioneer the creation and distribution of cheap transmitters, as well as taking the heat federally and in terms of local authorities. I remember we actually set up a station ourselves, a makeshift broadcasting station on the sidewalk outside Pacifica's KPFA in Berkeley in 1992 or 93 it was. Anyway, we'll explore those glory days and get to more current issues at about 6:45 tonight. I had hoped to have James, the guest who you actually heard last week, talking about tasering in the jails and how he was tasered while being held down by the sheriff's deputies here in the Santa Cruz County Jail. Shortly after that, David Anthony Cross was tasered and soon thereafter died in what I wrote at the time seemed to be a death prompted by the tasering, or complicated by the tasering, or somewhat induced by the tasering. It led me to put pressure on Rotkin of the city council here and the head of the public safety committee to get tasering guidelines going in Santa Cruz, and I think that's still in an inadequate situation, but since it's hard to keep up with all these things at once, I don't really know what the situation is. Last focus we had on the Public Safety Committee meeting, the Public Safety Committee's activities or lack thereof. They're the supposed police oversight body. They aren't anything of the kind, of course. They're the police enabling and the police fig leaf body. They include council members Coonerty, Porter, and Rotkin, and they meet irregularly. They're supposed to have regular meetings every month or every other month. But half of them are usually canceled each year. They schedule their public comment times at the end of the meeting, so it's difficult for people to be a part of them. And when the issues get hot, like the issue of Spygate and the police department spying on peaceful protesters, they shut the meetings down early, or they simply suspend them altogether, and they don't really discuss the meaningful issues, and they don't keep their word about engaging the public in a real public process so that there can be some significant and meaningful surveillance protections for ordinary citizens who are trying to engage in political activity, and some understanding of just how widespread surveillance has been. I mean, we get a wink and a nod from the police auditor, Bob Aronson, that things aren't so bad, but we haven't gotten a written report from him. I know Huff member, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom member, Green Party activist and one-time city council candidate Thomas Levitt, who's also a free radio broadcaster on Sunday mornings, has sent a Public Records Act request to the city. He's asked Bob Aronson. I don't know if it's a Public Records Act request or just an informal request, maybe both. That Bob, who is the $20,000 or $30,000 a year police auditor who feeds on the corpse of the Citizens Police Review Board's funding, he took their money and now has private conversations with the city council, but issues no public written reports that I've ever seen, and he's been in that position for 3 years. Levitt sent him a request asking for any public records. We'll see if any of that ever comes about. I don't think it has. In fact, I will probably attempt to follow up on that request. Making a note of that now. Bob Aronson, take note. Again, if you want to be a part of this show, if you've got issues you want to raise, issues you think have been raised but not have been fully addressed, it's your option to call in, 427-3772. You can catch me off air if you want to be more circumspect at 423-4833. You can go to the website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. 423-HUFF is the number, 423-4833, as I said before. And the actual web address is Huff Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, .org, HUFFSantaCruz.org. This show, which we call Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, is archived on that site. And actually, thanks to Thomas Levitt and me, both of us, we are actually updating the notes on the website so you can actually read what's been happening at the last few shows and get some sense if you're trying to track down a particular interview or you're interested in a particular subject. You can zero in on it a bit more closely than simply having to listen to 40 different shows until you find the right interview. So, again, that's at huffsantacruz.org for past shows. 427-3772, if you want to call into this show, 427-3772. And if you want to leave me a message about being a future guest or comments on the show, 423-4833. If you want to help Free Radio Santa Cruz generally, or you've got questions about the station, the number to call is 427-4523. Again, 427-4523. It's a voicemail, but there's a really actually much more responsible person than myself who goes in there, a number of people actually, and answer the voicemail inquiries. If you want to donate some equipment to Free Radio, some funding, some good advice, some nasty criticism, some kindly consolation, you want to get a show, whatever you want to do, maybe you have a public service announcement you think should be made, don't be shy. Call in 427-4523, and we will get back to you. Hey, here's an example of somebody calling my show. Let's see what's cooking. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hi, this is Jim Vivian.
Speak up if you can, Jim.
Oh, this is Jim Vivian.
Hey, Jim.
Unfortunately, I'm having to call on my cell phone because I don't have a long-distance access code on my regular phone. I was surprised that I needed one.
Oh, okay. Well, I can hear you now. Jim, I know that you're calling from San Jose, right?
Yeah.
And I know that we've been involved in a number of protests covering civil rights for homeless people and housing for homeless people with CHAM, Community Homeless Alliance Ministry in San Jose. And also, you've recently been getting into other fields involving, what, police misconduct and other, or just trying to live your life?
I have been involved in fighting police misconduct for many years. And I haven't been too heavily involved in CHAM recently, but you know, I was many years ago. I did help them more, and I do go to their events and things like that, but I'm not actually involved in that group. Is that what you are?
Yeah, for those who are interested in homeless issues, and many are who listen to this show, CHAM, CHAM, Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, Scott Wagers is the kingpin in that particular group, and they've been fighting for years to expand housing and basic services for homeless people. and had some success in doing so. And you can go to their website. I believe if you Google for CHAM, you'll find it. But, Jim, you contacted me by email last week because of a trial that you were going into in San Jose, municipal court?
Well, they're all superior court now, but it was in traffic court. And basically what's going on is the charge I was accused of, and I'm not guilty of, was basically a charge that the homeless people would usually get, and that was for being in a park, and they said it was during closing hours, which it wasn't, but I was in a park. I was sleeping in a lawn chair.
When was this?
Sleeping bag. This was back last December. And the point of this is the whole homeless policy, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, is to facilitate sweeps of the homeless anytime the police want them off the street. So the idea is to get a warrant out for their arrest. So what they do is and they also don't want to spend too much money on, you know, these homeless people. I mean, that's the way they feel about it. So what they do is they send them to traffic court where basically you don't have too many rights. You don't get a police report even when you're arraigned or anything like that. So what they're doing is, you know, they put a big fine on it that, you know, people who are homeless are, you know, luckily I haven't been homeless, but I don't have much money and I can't pay, you know, the fine. And certainly homeless people rarely appear on these things. So what happens is they don't have a right to a public defender if they do appear. So that saves money because what they do is they reduce all these. If you do appear, they reduce everything from a misdemeanor, which it was originally, to an infraction. And then all of a sudden you lose your rights to a jury trial, to a public defender, and all that kind of stuff that costs money. So it's just set up very much for expedience, and the judge, you know, has about 150 cases he has to get through in an hour and a half. So if you start asking a few questions or hesitate a little bit before you agree to everything he wants you to or she wants you to, he in my case, they get kind of upset at that because the whole system is made to basically not be wasting too much time or money on these homeless people, but make it so they can be picked up off the streets anytime there's a big convention or the president's in town or whatever.
Right.
So in my particular case, I was, in fact, sleeping in the park at 10:30 in the morning, and the post sign in the park says it opens at sunrise. This isn't Tierra del Fuego. This is in San Jose, California. It wasn't in North Alaska, so you can rest assured it was after sunrise at 10:30 in the morning, which actually was 7:17 that day, according to weather.com. Now, this cop, who apparently has some reputation for harassing homeless people, his name is Officer E. Martin. I don't know his first name. He is
a San Jose officer.
He's a San Jose PD officer. It's badge number 3618. So if anybody has any information on him, I might like to get some in case I want to do a fitness motion and get his police file and see what he's been up to. But I need, like, something solid to get that on, so I am interested in getting information if anybody has it.
Actually, you don't, to make a pitchess motion, you don't need anything other than you request the any past complaints regarding a particular aspect of his conduct, whether you feel he writes false police reports or, you know, is guilty of excessive force or has a tendency to, abuse women, whatever. I mean, if there's, and you ask that if any of those reports touch on those subjects, and so you could then get the name and contact information for a person who might serve as a witness to you to discredit the officer's testimony based on that officer's past behavior. And you, of course, it's a complicated motion to make, but I don't think it requires a lot of background. I could be wrong about that. I know my attorneys, and I have attorneys for my trial on September 25th next month, made pitches motions around the guy who busted me at City Hall. But, you know, and then
that's interesting. I got to do more research on it, so that might be easier to make them.
Did you actually go to, have you actually been tried yet, or are you still awaiting trial?
No, actually what happened on this is that there was a motion hearing on Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
In the, what happened is when I first went into arraignment, I had asked the judge, I said, well, okay, he said, well, you don't get a police report here in traffic court like you do in, you know. And I said, well, it's a misdemeanor. He said, well, yeah, well, we don't get police reports. And I said, well, can I file a motion then if I can't get one? He said, sure, we'll set a hearing, and, you know, that was August 22nd. The trouble was, well, there were a bunch of problems that developed then, and it turned out that wasn't a good day. It was too soon, actually, to beat all the time limits and stuff to file a discovery motion.
I'm sorry.
So I filed a... August 22nd was too soon to meet the time requirements I would have had to meet under the California Code and California Rules of Court to file a discovery motion. I couldn't have...
In other words, you could file it, but the officer is not required to respond until slightly later.
Well, not exactly. No, I can't even really file it.
You mean there's a time limit as to how soon you can file a motion? I would imagine there is one as to how late. That's interesting.
Well, let me explain. Basically, what the deal is the trial was set on September 13th, the motion hearing on August 22nd. They have until 30 days before trial to give you the discovery you request, and then that was August 14th. Then you got to give 10 days notice for the motion hearing, and the judge made it clear, he said, I'm not going to just let you present an oral motion. You're going to have to give proper notice and all that. So basically, I couldn't have done it. I mean, I would have had to wait till the DA or city attorney's office closed on the 14th and see if I didn't get my stuff by then. And then on the 15th would be the earliest I could file a motion for, I guess, the 25th or 26th of August. So the 22nd would be soon.
August, not of September, right?
Of August. Well, the motion hearing was set on August 22nd.
So I'm not sure I totally understand this, but the essence of it was the judge is putting you in a position where it would be difficult, if not impossible, and you would have one or two days to file a motion, something like that? Is that my understanding of that?
Well, I wouldn't have been able to file one within the time limit by August 22nd.
That sounds like an appealable issue if you want to spend your time running around
appeal
courts.
I think it was corrected in court. I think it was a mistake. Actually, you know...
What was the mistake?
I think he probably just wasn't aware, probably, that it was too soon. You know, he wasn't figuring out...
Well, you know, the issue that you emailed me about was the practice, which I'm concerned about here in Santa Cruz as well, as I told you in my email, of judges capriciously and routinely and without any kind of discussion or consent from the defendant reducing misdemeanor charges to infractions. Misdemeanors, for those who don't know, are more serious than infractions, but as you've already said, Jim, they involve your right. You have a right to a jury trial, you have a right to a public defender, you have a right to a police report, that sort of thing. And I guess in theory you have a right to a police report and an infraction too, except they don't write police reports usually for infractions, and you don't have the usual discovery process. You have to kind of make it work and put in a lot of energy and time to do it, because they expect you to just fall in line and plead not guilty or give a little song and dance, and then they might or might not be nice to you, but you won't get a real standard trial by the standards of an ordinary judicial trial. But you were charged with being in a park after hours, which is a misdemeanor in the San Jose Municipal Code. Is that right?
Right.
And it's which park was it, by the way?
Mary Jane Heyman Park in West San Jose.
Is this a park where Food Not Bomb serves?
I don't believe so.
I just wondered.
I think they, in the past, I'm not too familiar with what they're doing right now.
Is this a park where homeless people hang out, or you just happen to be, it was just you hanging out?
It was just me.
Just you. So you attempted to have this... This was reduced to an infraction, and you weren't aware that you had the right to object, or he reduced it to an infraction even though you wanted a misdemeanor, or it's still in a misdemeanor. What's the story?
Well, I didn't know I had the right to object. I think, like I mentioned in my email, that's something you should definitely talk about with your radio listeners, because you sent me a bunch of information about in the penal code, basically, that I could have made a formal objection. I made sort of an informal objection. I just kind of questioned. I'm saying, like, okay, it was obvious I didn't have any right to a jury trial. It was an infraction, and I wasn't getting a police report, which I needed, and I didn't have a right to a public defender, he said, because I asked for one. the good thing about it being an infraction is you don't have a misdemeanor hanging over your head, so I'm not saying it's necessarily bad, but I questioned it, you know, and I did, when I went into court the first day for arraignment, I tried to, you know, study the law that was applicable to what the situation is, and all of a sudden they just change it instantly, you know. So I just wasn't prepared for it, and I mean, I don't know if I would have, I mean, it's got good and bad things about it.
So what's the current
infraction?
Well, for those, you asked that I kind of...
I certainly didn't consent to it.
Right.
But I didn't formally object to it.
Right. I mean, it's a code section that those of us down here in Santa Cruz became aware of because part of the strategy that we had at least a decade ago or more, when there were more people fighting things like the sleeping ban, which is an infraction, or actually in fighting charges that arose out of protests, where we were charged with different kinds of misdemeanors, and then in order to get us off the books, they would say, well, here we're going to reduce this all to an infraction. It often happened with a thing called failure to appear. Failure to appear is, if you don't appear in court on your court date, that's a misdemeanor. And the reality of it is you're entitled to a jury trial on the charge of failure to appear, and you're entitled to a public defender. And in practice, particularly for poor defendants that the courts can't get much out of, they don't want to do a jury trial on you for that. That's, you know, impaneling a jury. That's expensive. Public defender's more expensive. You know, you might have had a reason not to appear. You might have a medical problem. Who knows? So what they've been doing in Santa Cruz courts is they've been using an illegal, in my view, shortcut. Or you might say it's both illegal and unconstitutional, since no law covers it, and it also violates basic constitutional right to, well, I guess you might say right to a public defender, the right to be represented by counsel. And because of court decisions, the right to have counsel appointed for you if you're indigent. And what they do is they just say, oh, we're reducing this to an infraction, and we're gonna help you out here. It's no longer a misdemeanor. It's now an infraction. And my response to that was, no, you can only do that with the consent of the defendant, or at least after informing him of his right in the absence of his objection. And that's never done. And to my knowledge, that has never been done by one referee, Meat Grinder Mulligan, or Basket Case Basket, who is now our current referee in the basement, our traffic court referee. The referee doesn't mean that she plays baseball or referees baseball. It means that that's the kind of the lowest echelon of the court hierarchy. You're a referee, then you're a commissioner, then you're a judge, you know, and so forth. So when you went to, what was the nature of your hearing on Tuesday?
Let me first explain what happened with this, because if I do that, it'll make things more understandable.
Okay.
What happened is, okay, like I said, I was sleeping in the park at 10:30 in the morning on December 20th. 2005, last December, and I had a sleeping bag. I mean, I didn't want to be cold. Basically, I was tired, and I had just gotten off work at 7 in the morning, and I kind of had trouble working that shift. I tend to get tired immediately when the sun comes
What
up.
Kind of work?
I do security work. And so I thought it would be safer to sleep in the park rather than drive on the road when I was not in a good condition to drive. Not because of any intoxicants, just because I'm sleepy. I don't drink or do drugs.
Right. Now, and you say you were some sort of a security guard, or?
Right.
Huh.
And
cool.
Interesting. And well, that's another interesting story. How I got into that.
But go ahead. So there you.
A lot of people are surprised when they hear that.
So this cop came along and said, you're sleeping in a lawn chair at 10:30, and it's actually still dark outside, even though the sun's high, therefore you're in the park before sunrise.
No, he didn't say that. He just wrote on the ticket 10:30 in the morning, and then he wrote something in the ticket, something to the effect of, well, I got it right here, so let me just look at it. He wrote down on the ticket the closing park hours. So I knew that it was something, you know, he was giving me this misdemeanor citation for something related to park closing hours. So what I did is I wrote on the ticket, the park is opened and I am not wet, because he said I was soaking wet. It was not raining, and I have he wrote on the ticket it was rain. That was the weather condition. I have the San Jose Mercury News, which said it hadn't rained in 24 hours. in weather.com.
Well, why do you think, what was the reason he wrote that? That's kind of obscure.
I don't know. It's kind of bizarre. I guess he needed some reason to say that since he was there at 10:30 in the morning, I must have been sleeping there, you know, all night.
So this happened in December of 2005. Why are we suddenly talking about it in August of 2006?
Well, let me explain that. I'll tell you what I also wrote on the ticket, aside from the park is open and I am not wet. I also wrote it is now 10:35 a.m. before I signed it. And that's one of the tricks I like to do. You know, anytime I go to jail, like don't start forcing you to sign papers without reading them, and I won't sign my name on it. I'll put they refuse to let me read this paper before I sign it.
Right.
Usually they don't notice. This guy did notice, and he got upset. He said, "You're supposed to sign it, not write that stuff on it, you know, and all that." But, you know, there's nothing they can do to you. So what happened is the traffic court, realizing this was not a violation of this San Jose Municipal Ordinance, because the park obviously wasn't closed at 10:30 in the morning, they sent the officer back the ticket for correction. And one good thing about traffic court here is they do have an email that you can, so you don't have to go wait in line all the time at the court.
Okay.
You can deal with stuff by email. And they were actually really good about helping me on this until suddenly when I was ready to file a motion, then they became obnoxious about everything.
Well, what new charge did they claim you were violating? Since it was, if they acknowledge it was he denied it was 10:35 in the morning. That was his claim.
Yes. Eventually, what happened is, so they sent this back to the officer for correction, and in after I appeared, they told me that because I had a date to appear in February of this year. So finally in April, in mid-April, I get this thing in the mail, which is a purported notice of correction, stating that the time was really 6:30 in the morning. This really happened at 6:30 in the morning.
Now, had this been reduced to an infraction by this time or not?
No, it wasn't changed.
Is it currently an infraction or not?
It's currently an infraction.
And when was it reduced to an infraction? I'm asking you because I got to have to go
arraignment.
On you pretty quick. What?
It's the arraignment.
When was the arraignment?
That was in July 17th.
You mean they arraign you 6 months after the charge? That sounds inappropriate.
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, they changed. I got this thing in April with a reporting date of June 16th, which I reported by that day and set an arraignment. They set it for July 17th.
Weird. So is there anything more we should know about this case? Do we know when your next court date is?
I do want to explain one thing. See, basically, my situation, I can prove I was at work at until seven in the morning, midnight till seven. I worked
right.
That morning.
You're going to bring in a witness, huh?
Well, see, that's the whole point. That's what a lot of this motion I filed was about, saying that I filed a continuance motion, and one of the things I said is, you know, I need more time because this is very complicated. Because any of the work records I have contain confidential client information.
Right,
what I
right.
did with the motion is, one of the nice things about the motion is you can attach, you know, all your exhibits to it and everything. And what I did is I used some blacked out documents where I blacked out the client information in the address, exact address of the client, but
right.
it proved I was on Losher Road, which is the East San Jose foothills until 7 a.m.
Well, it sounds like you've got a number of defenses, but you're not being, there are two concerns. One is you're not being allowed to, I guess, challenge the infraction designation, and then the second is you're not yet. Did you get the continuance?
Yeah, I did.
And
when's
your new court? I got to roll on you in about a minute. So go ahead.
So anyways, but the issue. Let me just finish this. So the issue was I would need a protective order to keep this information out of you know, if the opposition refuses to let me do that. Now it's like it's
a protective order. Wait a minute. It's getting complicated, and the problem is it's not really something I think we can go into right now.
Okay.
What's the main thing the audience should know about this case? What should they take away from this conversation?
I think it's important for people to understand how this process works and why they process these things that way. And it sounds like they do basically the same thing in Santa Cruz and probably do it just about everywhere.
And
as far as my next court date, it is a hearing on the 12th of September. One of the good things the judge did, and something I had asked him to do, is to make his own motion, since I obviously deserve discovery in this case. He says there's probably just going to be a note from the back of the ticket. That's probably all I'm going to get. Well, that's just fine, because if all we have to go on is the original ticket, I'm in really good shape.
Okay, well, you'll be appearing in court on September 12th. What time and what court?
It's going to be at 1:30, and there's a motion to compel discovery that the judge made, which is really good that he went ahead and did that, and saying that city attorney, who has not appeared or done anything, and even admitted they have the case, that they are the ones who need to produce the discovery.
And this is simply another motions hearing. It's not the trial, right?
It's another motion hearing, and he said if they don't
okay.
show up that day, he's just going to drop it.
Fair enough.
There is a trial date on the 17th of October, if we need it.
Okay, well, I want to give us an update further. Hopefully we can make it more concise, because this one took 20 minutes. My problem is I got time limited tonight because I got guests coming in. I got stuff I want to broadcast. But we're talking with Jim Vivian, who's been involved a lot in trying to cover issues of police brutality, misconduct, and harassment of the homeless in San Jose. Do you have a website or any place people can go if they want more information on other things you've been doing recently?
Yeah, I really don't have a website that I
well, get it together, Jim. Get a website.
Yeah,
all right.
I know.
Get back to us when you've got more information about other stuff. I'd like to get a general update on San Jose at some point, but probably now is not the time. But if you can, call in again. You've got the regular times for the show, right?
Right.
Or Sundays, 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon, and, of course, 6 to 8 on Thursdays. I appreciate your calling in.
Okay, well, thank you.
Hey, thank you, man. Phone lines are open, 427-3772, and I am going to be having guests in the studio in about 10 minutes, and that's going to take up a big chunk of time, hopefully be pretty interesting. Stephen Dunifer, a seminal figure in producing the accessibility to free radio transmitters, as well as a person who took a lot of risk and spoke out in Berkeley and helped establish Free Radio Berkeley, and has also been an activist on a number of other issues around peace and justice in Berkeley and probably in other spots as well. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Uncle Robert here.
Hey, Robert, how's it going?
Okay.
I got a question for you.
Uh-huh.
September 11th, as you know, is coming up in a little over a couple weeks, and I was thinking, if I can get my uncle to agree to call in and be a guest, would you like to have him? Because he's to have an office in the Pentagon, and we've been sort of debating about 9/11, and he seems to buy the usual bullshit story that it's Al-Qaeda, and, oh, you know, it was Osama bin Laden and all that, and he says that a friend of his has some pictures of the disaster at the Pentagon, and I talked to him a few weeks ago, and I asked him, I said, you know what, Uncle Jack, you just send me those pictures that you said that you have. It's Boeing 757 that hit the Pentagon, and now speak for itself. But I still haven't gotten the pictures, and I told him I didn't get them.
Andrea, let me ask you, what day is 9/11? What day is
Monday.
It's
Sunday.
It's
like 3 weeks from this Monday, I think.
So it's a Monday?
Yeah.
Remember, my show is on Sundays.
He'd be on September the 10th, actually, because
right.
the 11th is on a Monday this year.
Well, you know, you're not dealing with an expert on 9/11. I mean, I haven't done a lot of research on that. But if you wanted to try to arrange to have, there is a group locally that's very concerned with 9/11 and believes, you know, that there were controlled explosions that demolished the Twin Towers and so forth. And I've seen some interesting arguments around that.
Yeah.
You could look into it and try to, you know, pass it on to them. And if they want to have a debate with your Uncle Jack on my show for a period of time, I guess we could do that a little bit, although it's a little off the beaten track. I sometimes get off the beaten track. Let me know about that, and we'll keep an ear open.
Yeah, because it's not a big deal. If you don't do it, I might try to ask a couple of other programmers, and if they don't want to do it, well, then that's cool. It's not a big deal.
No. I mean, it's not I won't do it.
I want to confront him.
Andrea, it's not that I won't do it. It's rather that somebody else has to arrange it. You have to get both sides.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'm not the person. I'm the moderator. I wouldn't be the person on the side. Let me roll on you, because I've got to, unless you got something else, I got to go.
Okay,
bye-bye. Bye-bye. I'm sorry to be so rapid here. I'm coming up against the clock, and there's some good stuff I wanted to get in here, and hopefully I'll get it in later today or possibly on Sunday. I have a tape of a man who was assaulted by a deputy up in Davenport about a month and a half ago. Bruce, his name is. We played a little teeny inkling of that about a week or two ago, but I've held back on it on the advice of an attorney and also Bruce asked sort of that I do the same, and now I'm going to proceed with it, and there's no objection that I'm aware of from either of them because they didn't file charges against Bruce, and even though, you know, this conceivably might complicate a legal civil case, it's really important for the community, I think, to know at least one side of the story about what went down up there in Davenport. So I'm going to try to do that. A couple of other things quickly. I hope on Sunday to get Richard Quigley on the air again. He's the guy that's maligned by DiCenzo, the cartoonist, in this issue of the Metro. He's the fellow who successfully got Judge Barton to tell the California Highway Patrol that it could not pretend that it had standards for helmets when those standards did not exist, and therefore it had to, in essence, allow people to wear the kind of helmet they want, given the existing state of the law, which, even though I'm not an original researcher on the law, I have not heard a successful argument that counters Richard Quigley's arguments, though, of course, the argument in DiCenzo's cartoon is for people who don't wear helmets, they still can become public charges if they are smashed against trees, and Quigley's argument is that there's no increase in accidents with in the extent of injuries if you don't wear a helmet than if you do, and there's a debate on that one, and so I may get him on the air on that issue and on other civil rights issues closer to the supposed subject matter of my show, which is civil rights for the homeless. Quigley's involved with or has been a witness to and often to some extent a victim of harassment at the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in Aptos, outside the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company and the sheriff's substation there, in his defense of Jerry Henry, who's a minister, a street minister, you might say, who's defended the rights of young people and homeless people out there, and is still banned from getting a cup of coffee. I have put some more information on the net about Roger Mensch. Roger Mensch is the guy who formerly ran a thing called the Hemporium, and that's a Felton marijuana distribution place, which D.A. Bob Lee went after, and he's still going after it. Mensch has suffered one conviction, which he's appealing, but the real issue to me is, why is Mensch being pursued for selling medical marijuana? Now, of course, I would also wonder why deputies are going after marijuana generally. Quigley, interestingly enough, wrote a letter in the Today's Sentinel asking the same question about why the marijuana enforcement team is going full guns ahead and bragging about its seizures of marijuana. Part of that, of course, can say, well, they're growing it on state land. It's a big syndicate, cartel. Maybe they're putting up bear traps around there, and you know, it's a commercial operation. All this, you know, the scare stuff, which is has some relevance, but the really relevant fact is the harassment of people growing, transporting, using, or selling marijuana is a major vicious racket, which has the force of law in our community. I mean, we know that Bush is crazy. We know the Congress sucks on this issue. But you have these guys like Bob Lee. I saw him downtown today, who parade around in a business suit with a civil smile, and he's so helpful. You have the Board of Supervisors, headed by our new supervisor. Well, not headed, but Major Santa Cruz District includes Neil Coonerty. That's that friendly bookshop owner, you know, who banned bookshops in the next store over as a part of the contract of that building. You have a population that's in essence said, let's get over the marijuana hysteria, and yet you have it continuing to be pumped up, and the number of arrests continues to rise nationally, and there's no indication that it's dropped locally. And I guess Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn has spoken on that. Anyway, I've written about this Roger Mensch case on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, which is Indie Media. And you can, if you want to follow it, you can. I'm trying to get more information. There's been not a peep out of his attorney, Ben Rice, or Mike Rotkin, a council member who's running for re-election, a former mayor, who did me the courtesy of answering my phone call directly about the Mensch case, and who had previously written a letter to the court suggesting Mensch was a good guy and, you know, a good citizen, and, you know, medical marijuana is an important need and so forth. But Haven't heard a word from him since they raised, since again, Mensch was rearrested in August, charged with the same thing again, and has been to court now, it's 20 to 40 times in the last year on four or five felony charges around transportation, sale, cultivation of marijuana. So that's something I suggest you look into. I'm going to try to get more info from Mensch and from other people. There was a forum on marijuana last Thursday in the afternoon. I didn't get to it. It was in the Santa Cruz Law Library, which is in the basement of the county building. If anybody did get to it, I'd love to hear about it because I haven't gotten a lot of details. I did hear from two participants that the issue of Mensch's case never came up, even though Ben Rice and was on the major, one of the two speakers, that's Mensch's attorney, and also the issue was medical marijuana in the county. I can't imagine how it wouldn't come up except that it's being kept under wraps. Perhaps Rice feels that's the best way to protect Roger Mensch, to keep it quiet, don't have firebrands like me shouting and ranting and raving about it. But apparently that approach did not stop the police and the MET team, the marijuana enforcement team, from rearresting Mensch in August. So check out the case on Santa Cruz Indy Media and see what you think. I have also put through calls to two city council candidates, two men running for city council, Simba Kenyatta, an African-American, and Christopher Cobb. I haven't talked to the other candidates, which include Lynn Robinson, Mike Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews, and Bruce Van Allen, because I kind of, perhaps prejudicially, regard them as hopeless. I certainly should give Lynn a chance to talk. She's never, been on my show, and she's been civil to me. Well, they've all been civil to me one way or another. I mean, but I feel the first three, well, Van Allen, Rotkin, and Matthews are... Well, the two city council members, Rotkin and Matthews, have clear records of repression at city council against activists, against homeless people, giving police, I think, definitely too much discretion again and again, anti-union, siding with developers and a bad environmental record to boot. In many respects. So there's that. Anyway, I called up Christopher Cobb, who Bruce Bratton apparently, I'm not sure if he likes him or not, but he's talked about him. Bruce Bratton has a website, used to have a column with the Metro Santa Cruz. He's a tall, older guy who's even older than I am, I think. Sometimes see him guzzling coffee downtown on the coffee cart across from Pizza My Heart, I guess it is, more or less, in that area, next to the Logos bookstore on Pacific Avenue. Cobb has a campaign his platform includes, here's what Bratton writes about him. Never met him before he filed for his campaign. He has a wife who's a personal law attorney with the 9th District Court of Appeals. Christopher Cobb is 36, two kids, 4.5 and 2.5. Lived in Santa Cruz since 96, likes Bruce Van Allen's politics, and hasn't met him yet. No on Highway 1 widening, no on university expansion, yes on the minimum wage increase, although he would rather it came from the state, yes on the measure in the ballot to hold the university accountable for the infrastructure if it adds students, no on paving Arena Gulch, he has an alternate bike plan, yes on workers' right to form a union, yes on building an R&D business park on the west side, yes on mixed-use dog-friendly areas like De La Vega and Lighthouse Field, yes on a coast hotel remodeled on the right way, and he stresses his position on bringing business into Santa Cruz, very different from bringing stores into Santa Cruz. Nothing about the drug war, nothing about the police department, nothing about civil rights for the homeless and poor, nothing about racial profiling or selective enforcement, nothing about any of those issues, which to me, of course, are ones I've been focusing on for years. Gone from Republican to Democrat, disappointed with both Libertarian and Green, likes what the Green Party stands for, very confident and likable fellow. Actually, I should tell you that tonight, for those of you who are politically either masochistic or both active and masochistic, there's going to be an endorsement meeting by the People's Democratic Club of Santa Cruz County. That's sort of a bunch of right-wing Democrats who are big into supporting Scott Kennedy and other gruesome council members for city council. They are going to be voting on the minimum wage and the marijuana, the lowest priority marijuana city initiative, which, interestingly enough, is not on the list, Cobb's list, up there as to what he endorses and what he doesn't endorse. They are meeting at Loudoun Nelson Center in about 10 minutes, and they meet from 7 to 9 o'clock tonight. You have to be a member for at least 30 days to vote, but I think you can come in and observe. I believe it's a public meeting. So that's People's Democratic Club voting on city council. Actually, they're voting on Capitola City Council, Soquel Water Creek District, Santa Cruz City ballot measures. Doesn't mention if they're actually going to endorse council candidates. I kind of, maybe it's a little early for them to endorse council candidates. We'll see. That's something that's happening tonight for those who are interested. Van Allen, Bruce Van Allen, who was mayor of Santa Cruz around, he and Rotkin were elected together back in the late 70s, 79, and they were a part of the so-called progressive majority that overturned the old so-called conservative majority, but were only progressive on some issues and not on issues around civil liberties for people who are poor and not on issues of controlling the police and not on issues of access to city council and so forth. Van Allen, I'm not familiar with his record on the council, but I know he has flocked and grouped and bunched with council members who have gladly arrested homeless activists, not just me, but many others, who have pressed for the kinds of services that we finally got them kicking and screaming to provide, which are completely inadequate, but are, you know, a beginning, including free meal, lockers, shelter. For a time, we actually got a campground open until Rotkin and Kennedy closed it. Van Allen, I don't know his position on each of these issues, and I think he probably may be a shade more liberal, but I just see him as a sort of a Rotkin shadow, maybe slightly on the left. Not clear, though. I'm going to invite him on the air to talk to him. He's been endorsed by Marty Wormhout, Fred Keeley, Bert and Louis Muley. That's Bert Muley, the former mayor of Santa Cruz, who was the author of, or I should say, the mayor when the Santa Cruz passed the sleeping ban in 1978. Robert Pohn, Bob Tarrin, Rachel Dunn, who's the new assistant for Neil Coonerty, the supervisor. Laurie Brooks, Bernice Belton, Paul Ellerick, Jim Danaher, Karen Gillette, former Homeless Community Resource Center head, Jane Yett, John Leopold, Patricia Myers, all of these names, some of them are unfamiliar to me, Tim Fitzmaurice and Ginny Fitzmaurice, and, of course, Bruce Bratton, who also supports him. So those people are coming up. Expecting soon to see, by the way, in the studio here at Free Radio, 101.1 FM, Joe Williams and his tag-along guest, Stephen Dunifer. So hopefully they'll be breaking in at any time, hopefully with the FCC very far behind them, if there at all. Anyway, I'm going to try to get these council candidates on the air to talk about how they stand on homeless issues. Don't hold your breath. It's not much much to hope for as to what's cooking with them. I think I'm going to begin this important tape, even though we're a little bit late here. Let's turn to it. This is an interview with a man who had a shocking story to present us at a Huff meeting about a month and a half ago.
It's about 25 to 10 on Wednesday, July 12th. Is that right? Or maybe the 13th, actually. We're at the Huff meeting. Bob Patton's here. And also with me is Bruce Hedenberg. And Bruce is, you actually have had some previous experience with camping tickets and Huff and such. Yeah. In fact, an attorney, Beth Kendall, defended you successfully. Can you kind of give us a recap of how that went, the camping tickets back then, just sort of so we can get a little background of the kind of experience you've had?
It was several years ago. Officer Perry pulled into the back of the 24-hour fitness where I'm a member. Mm-hmm. And after a lot of commotion and harassing. He cited me for camping in the back on private property of a club that I was a member of.
This was, I think, Sharon Pate had a similar problem, another Huff member.
I'm vaguely familiar with the situation that she had also.
Right.
Yes. But can we talk about what happened on Friday?
Sure. We're going to skip ahead now. I just want to say that did you successfully get that ticket dismissed in court?
Yeah. It was dismissed. Beth won the case.
And this was in the court of Commissioner Joseph.
It was kicked up to the Superior Court.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember the name of the judge?
I remember his face, but I don't remember his name.
Gotcha. Always interested in camping cases, particularly successful ones, particularly the rare successful ones defended by attorneys. So that's why I mentioned that. But there's a more serious matter that came up on Friday when you were visiting a friend in Davenport.
Yes, I got up to Davenport around 10 o'clock, parked in front of the Aero store and the U.S. Post Office, and my friend who rents the apartment above the Aero store and the Post Office, his name is Bo. Bo came down with his dog, whose name is Jackson, saw that I just had pulled up and said that he was taking his dog across the street for a walk. Do I want to bring my dog? My dog is named Scarlet. So I said, yeah, I want to bring Scarlet, and we walked across the street to walk our dogs.
Across Highway 1?
Correct, across Highway 1. There's a big open field there. And
about what time?
About 10 o'clock.
In the evening?
Yes, correct. And we were in the lot maybe for about 45 seconds when the sheriff SUV pulled in like a missile aimed right at us. It wasn't like he had his height or his beam on. It wasn't like he was searching the lot. He came right at us at about 50 miles an hour, threw on the brakes, dust everywhere, and then he sat there in his vehicle for about 2 minutes with his high beams directly on us. And
what did you do during this time?
We waited to see what he was going to do next. We just didn't do anything. Our dogs were there. We were there. He had his guitar there. We had just walked across the street.
And nobody else was there but the two of you, your two dogs, and this police officer in his vehicle?
That is correct. I'm
sorry. I want to pause.
Robert, I've been sleeping up in Davenport for about 3 years. And I went to the sheriff's substation about three and a half years ago. And I spoke with a Sergeant Jacks, a Terry Jacks, at 3 or 4 years ago. And Sergeant Jacks told me that, he said, Bruce, he says, don't park on the west side of Highway 1, the ocean side. He said, you're subject to getting a ticket. We cite people that are on the west side of Highway 1. He said, if you're going to sleep in your van, go to the pull on the east side of Highway 1, the mountain side. So what I've been doing for about 3 years is going past Davenport up to Cement Plant Road and pulling off onto Cement Plant Road and parking directly across from the cement plant in the little dirt turnout area. So on Friday morning, I woke up across from the cement plant and started my engine, warmed up my engine, pulled out onto cement plant, and then onto Highway 1 and drove into the city of Davenport, where I parked in the big parking lot on the ocean side that everybody parks in, and got out of my van and went into the Whale City Bakery to have a cup of coffee, to get a cup of coffee. So I ordered my large coffee and turned around to go to the cream and sugar bar, coffee bar area, and I put my cream in my coffee, and I turned around, and there was a guy about 20, 25 feet away sitting down, just staring at me intently, giving me what a lot of people call stink eye. And stink eye is when somebody looks at you like you stink or like you smell bad, but they're so far away that they can't tell if you smell bad or not, but they're just looking at you like you do. So I kind of shrugged my shoulders, and I thought, well, and I just walked out of the Whale City Bakery and kind of just ignored it, just went directly to my van across the street where my dog was, and I'm sitting there taking dry swigs of Malto Mill and washing it down with coffee. That's my breakfast. Dry swigs of Malto Mill, washing it down with coffee. When a vehicle pulls up alongside of me, and I look over, and it's a fairly new gold four-door Crown Vic. I mean, who buys Crown Vics these days, like new ones? But there was the same guy that had been giving me stink eye in the Whale City Bakery when I got my coffee, who I'd never spoken to and I never said anything to, and I don't know the guy. Never seen him before in my life. And he starts going off on me, giving me all this evil energy. Like, what are you doing here? Every time I come by, I see your van here. I don't want you here. What are you doing here? You don't belong here. You know, and he was just going on and on and on and on. And I'm like, good morning. And I, that's what I thought in my head anyway, but I waited for him to get through with his tyrant. And when he got done, I looked over at him and I said, fuck you. And I got out of my van, and he says to me, he says, you might be just one guy, but I've got an army. And
that's Bruce Hedenberg, and a story that gets worse and worse and more interesting, and I'm going to probably be playing some of that tape again. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, and freakradio.org here in Santa Cruz. And the reason I have to cut this short is because I got live people on the hook here, so to speak. In the studio with me, we have two notorious persons who I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves. They can fight over who goes first. they're not fighting. This is very boring. Go ahead.
This isn't television.
No,
television.
No. It's not the Jerry Springer Show, I don't think, is it? No.
I'm working on it.
You're working on it. Okay. Well, this is Stephen Dunifer.
Joe Williams.
And let's acquaint our audience with your various claims to fame. Joe, you're an activist who's been active in Santa Cruz and the Bay Area around peace issues, pretty much.
You say that, among other things.
A traitor to this country, in other words.
Exactly.
And as for you...
Treasonous dog.
And you're an empowerer of adolescent rebels south of the border. What's your name, sir? Yeah, you're Dunifer, I believe?
Stephen Dunifer, yes.
And what have you been up to that has made you worth listening to on the radio?
Well, to qualify that, I suppose. Well, our most recent projects that we've been working with have been mostly in... Mexico, Central America, and South America. As people hopefully are aware, there's a lot of indigenous movements are gaining strength and power in various countries, and have basically thrown out entire governments, as in the case of Bolivia, for example. And we're hopefully helping empower that process with small low power radio stations, teaching people how to build their own transmitters and set up and create their own community broadcast voices, basically.
You began this back in 93, or with that fine, upstanding associate, the guy you were on the sidewalk with, broadcasting into free radio, into the Pacifica with, what was his name, the guy with the beard, Norse, Robert Norse.
I remember him.
Just had to throw in a plug for myself. So I know that Has the free radio movement in this country been expanding? I mean, I had heard it was like 3 or 4 years ago, and then when I talked to the V-Man and a couple of other people more informed on the subject than I suspect, they told me that it wasn't expanding anymore. Is it expanding still?
As far as I know, I mean, we still keep getting requests for assistance in setting up stations here. So people are still putting up radio stations, as far as I know. I mean, it's probably a turnover one way or the other, but there's certainly, I don't know, maybe it's, you know, it's not as high volume as it, you know, was perhaps some, you know, years ago.
Any other associations of micro broadcasters that have annual meetings, and are they used to have annual meetings and so forth? Is that still happening, or?
No, no one's really kind of put the energy into that lately. So.
And what about in California? I mean, do we know how many micro power stations there are approximately in California? I know I don't for sure, but I know that used to be one in Watsonville, and I don't know if there is there. There may be one down there again. There used to be one in Monterey. I don't think there is one now. Big Sur used to have one. I don't know if it. I mean, I've got the impression that we're losing ground here.
Yeah, well, I think that's, you know, it could be, you know, seen that way in certain areas. I mean, I don't know why people. I mean, given our current, you know, the current situation, I don't know what's preventing people from, you know, doing this. Really, I mean, it's, I mean, with, you know, Bush and company bankrupting the country, the FCC is so far down the federal food chain in terms of budgetary and resource allocations. They don't have the budget to go after people right now, and that's, to me, a perfect opportunity to keep putting up stations. I don't know what, you know, I don't know why people are, I mean, the FCC, I mean, they don't, you know, they don't carry guns, they can't arrest you, they basically just throw paper at you, and occasionally they try to do some sort of, you know, celebrity bust like they did here in Santa Cruz a couple of years ago that mm-hmm. didn't really turn out all that well for them, actually. I mean, you're still on the air. And
their tires were deflated.
And their tires were deflated. And they probably spent $100,000 to do that, you know, that raid. And, you know, I mean, it
have there been less raids under the Republican administration than under the Clinton administration in the same period of time? What's your offhand reaction? Or would you say you don't know?
I just don't know. I mean, yeah. It seems to be less. I mean, I haven't heard any big, you know, big raids. No one. I mean, the last one was, well, I mean, the last big blowout was here. And then I think they came after Berkeley Liberation Radio. But, you know, it's.
And there have been no cases in California, people actually taken to court and criminally prosecuted. There have in other places in the country, right, for free radio stations.
Well, criminal prosecution has been very rare in most cases. It's mostly been some sort of civil action at best. But, I mean, the FCC, I mean, given their experience with myself and other court cases, I mean, they're very loath to go into court at this point with anybody. So, I mean, you know, even if you're threatened with fines, they still have to take you to court, you know, to collect the fine. They have to, you know, they have to go through this whole process. And, again, that's, you know, they have to spend the resources to do that, and they don't have the resources to do that. So, really, their sort of quick and dirty thing is to, you know, try to convince some federal judge to give them a seizure order and come in with federal marshals. But that costs them so much to do, both in publicity and in just in terms of resources and people. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I just...
Is free radio still... I mean, I have no idea how many people listen to this show, for example. But is it... when he asked if it was growing in terms of the number of stations, I guess what I'm really wondering is... And since you're talking about it, it probably is growing in third world countries, definitely. But, I mean, and before we go there, and that's probably where we should be going, because that sounds like what you've been up to recently. I'm just trying to get some idea of whether you think it's growing, let's say, in Berkeley. The number of people who listen to it still listening to it, or they turn to the Internet instead? I mean.
I just don't know.
Yeah. Joe, any opinions on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think one way to gauge it is that there's a you have a lot of people out there who are still buying gear and still buying equipment. Whether they're broadcasting with it, it's going to be hard to say. And then beyond that, you have to look at, like, are they like a community radio station? Are they making some kind of effort to involve the community and invite, you know, other people in to participate? I think that's a unique kind of station. I think there's a lot of vanity stations out there, people who buy it for themselves and, you know, will broadcast for themselves. But a truly a community station is not as widespread as I'd like to see.
I know when I was at last saw you up in Berkeley at 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, you were making parts for different, you were, I guess, kits. You were selling kits. Has the number of kits you're sold domestically increased as far as you know? Are you still doing that? I mean, would you have
Yeah, we're still doing domestic kits. I mean, it's steady. I mean,
steady.
So, I mean, there's a, you know, I think it's occurring in, you know, places, you know, outside, you know, California. I mean, like, we get, you know, people more, central part of the country or places you wouldn't, where they're actually trying to do some sort of community process. And of course, this whole thing with LPFM has kind of muddied the water as well.
What is LPFM? Am I a little challenged here?
It's basically the few crumbs FCC decided to create this low-power FM service.
All right.
It's fine.
If you haven't been a bad boy, illegal broadcaster, and if there is room for you somewhere in the cornfields, they'll give you, but not in the cities.
Of course not, no.
Right. Okay.
And
you want to wait 4 years for your license. And
spend a bunch of money on the study, and yeah.
Right.
I think Free Radio here considered it, and we decided that was probably not the way to go.
No. Yeah. Well, and given the climate with the right-wing fundamentalism in this country that, one pinhead fundamentalist can call in with some decency complaint, against a licensed station, whether it's LPFM or commercial or whatever it may be, and basically, get them slapped with a huge fine. And if you actually have more freedom and rights being unsanctioned, unlicensed, than you do as a licensed station, because, in the final analysis, what a license really is a business law contract between whoever signs it and the issuing government agency. Whether it's a fishing license or a broadcast license, it's still a business law contract, basically. And when you sign that license, you basically give up a whole bunch of rights and liberties.
I'm tempted to ask you about, you've been living in Berkeley, I take it. You're, this TUPA card you gave me, Transporters Uniting the People of the Americas. Is
Transmitters.
Transmitters. Whoops.
Transporters. We got to beam you back down.
Well, I'm trying to look further ahead into the future.
Well, the Mayan pyramid there may have been used as a transporter of some sort.
There you are. I knew there was that. But in Berkeley, I want to ask you more about how, what the impact is. You're not involved with any of the free radio stations. In fact, you've been banned from the court. You were protected by a court order from Claudia Wilken until, 1988 or so, and then you had to fade into the woodwork or some such thing?
Free Radio Berkeley itself was shut down by a federal court injunction in 1998. And then there's also a thing they're saying that I was
the criminal mastermind behind the Free Radio Berkeley.
Right, there was, this injunction against myself that says I can't, engage in, unlicensed broadcast activity.
And have you been? Quick, admit it here on the air. Come on, you can do it. Not a word.
He's doing it now.
Keep an eye on this, folks. He is not. This is not the real Denver. This is his brother that's in here. So what, I guess my, I want to get to this, but I just, before we leave this, the domestic situation, the local Berkeley situation, do you think more people are listening to, I guess there's Liberation Radio, rather than Free Radio Berkeley. Quickly, it was replaced by Liberation Radio, right? There was
Berkeley
Liberation Radio.
Although it doesn't seem to be able to get it together to get a website, what's the problem with that? Does anybody know? Nobody knows.
We even offered them to do a simple page for them and free hosting, and they, who knows?
Yeah, strange.
To be honest, it's a very dysfunctional situation.
Sounds like Free Radio Santa Cruz, actually.
Well, I think you're all a lot more together than they are.
Come to our next meeting.
No, thank you.
Go to their next meeting.
Yeah, right. Well, so do you think more people are listening to Berkeley? I ask you about Berkeley because you don't know about the situation in California or nationally, and you probably don't know about Berkeley either. Do you have any sense of whether... Are you listening to Liberation Radio these days? No. All right. Well, that says the story, doesn't it? And yet you're pushing this TUPA thing. Tell me about TUPA.
Well, TUPA is a project that we started as a result of doing workshops in 2003 in Cancun with the WTO protest down there. Prior to the protest, there was a media gathering, and we did transmitter building training workshops. And in discussing with people from Oaxaca and some other communities, we've been doing international work, of course, before, actually almost from the very beginning. But with what was, seeing what was happening, particularly in Latin America, that with the growing indigenous movements in Mexico and Central and South America, we really started thinking that we should focus our efforts there to help facilitate whatever processes were happening with those communities. And one of the operations in Oaxaca was called, it's called TUPA. It's based on, TUPA is actually a Mixtec god. So We thought, yeah,
it was a faith-based organization.
Yeah,
that
not, no.
So
no, but it's basically, it was, you know, the idea of sort of ethereal energy kind of floating around seemed to fit the whole concept of radio waves.
And radio power, perhaps, is the next on your agenda?
What?
Radio power is the next.
Radio power?
Let's talk Tesla.
That's a whole other story. But
yeah, that's another story.
But basically, it was, so now we're basically working on this program to do training and workshops and build stations. Like, we'll be spending most of September in Mexico next month to do 3 training workshops there.
I know there's a massive camp out, or there was, I don't know if the police have dispersed it yet, hopefully not, in Mexico City, supporting Obrador's demand for a recount on the recent election. Have there been much free radio activity going on in Mexico City that you know of?
There's definitely free radio activity going on there. There's Radio Cahuelga. I mean, there's at least several other stations on that I know of. I mean, there's a lot of, well, I mean, actually, there's a huge amount of activity in the state of Oaxaca. There's at least right now 35 indigenous free radio stations on the air.
And lots of teachers' strikes and seizures of other radio stations. Yes. Are you involved in this, sir?
Well,
not yet.
Uh-huh. Very interesting.
Soon come.
By the way, Joe, if you want to chime in here, feel free to do so.
I'm glad you're talking about Oaxaca, because it seems like people in other countries are more tuned in to the importance of the communications media down there. I think, they're much more engaged and active. It seems like Americans are still, very passive about how they get their communications. They sit back and let it be pumped into them rather than actively go out and make it. So it's nice to see some movement south of the border.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was actually a few weeks ago there was, a large women's march in the city of Oaxaca, and the women decided they would go do something useful, and they went and seized the state TV station, Channel 9, and there was also, I think, an FM station associated with it. And they've been broadcasting all these great documentaries, actually the same documentaries that we'll be showing this Sunday in Oakland. But so last Sunday night, Monday morning, these hired mercenary thugs came in with automatic weapons and shot up Channel 9. And destroyed the equipment and burned these buses that were part of the block, that had been used to blockade the road. And so subsequently, the indigenous autonomous movement there went and seized 9 FM and AM radio stations in the city of Oaxaca. And as far as I know, they're still holding them. I haven't checked the news for a little bit, but.
Here's Indy Bay for those who want to check the Oaxaca situation. Let's go to indybay.org. Paramilitaries and police in Oaxaca began a violent campaign to shut down all media operations in opposition to the pre-governor Ulysses Ruiz Ortiz and to silence the people's movement that has taken over the state. And it's a somewhat lengthy report. Looks like it's got a lot of secondary information, too. Again, that's at indybay.org. On the main website, People of Oaxaca Under Attack, as their TV station is destroyed. We're talking with...
Yeah, we posted some photos there of the destruction of the station.
And that's Stephen Benefer, talking to you now, as well as in the studio is Joe Williams, myself, and I won't mention any other names at this time, but there may be some other people present in case any of us, should we say, suffer untimely accidents. So give a call if you've got any questions for Stephen or Joe on the issues he's talking about, 427-3772, 427-3772 is the phone number to call. I'm also actually going to check the Pages in Color chat room, which never has anybody on it but me, and that's today is no exception.
Also, you can check narconews.com. They have a lot of good updates on what's happening both in Mexico City and in Oaxaca.
I haven't seen much on Bolivia on Narco News lately. Any good sources for Bolivia that you could think of?
Well, I mean, there's the Bolivian, IMC site.
Doesn't Weinberg still do stuff on the World
Weinberg,
War IV report?
Yeah, Weinberg does stuff.
And how can people access, who is Weinberg and what's this all about?
Bill Weinberg. Just do search for Bill Weinberg. And
how do you spell Weinberg?
W-E-I-N-B-E-R-G.
You come up with World War IV
report.
So Bill Weinberg is someone, if you're interested in news on Bolivia, I'm
well, he does a lot. He does a lot of stuff on down south and as well as other places, but he'd be a good source. At least somebody be talking about it. You're asking about sources.
And again, for more information on the kind of on Tupa, a good website or source is
our website is radiotupa.org.
Radiotupa.org. Also check out the freeradio.org website if you want a kit or know somebody else.
Yeah,
who
I
want to
talk
one.
About that. But maybe we have a question here from a caller. Could that be? Hi, you're on Free Radio with Steve, Joe, and Robert. Are you there?
Yes, this is the FCC. We have you surrounded. We'd like you to come out immediately.
Fuck you, motherfucker! Or let me put it this way. Put your air in the hands, mother sticker. This is a fuck-up.
Is that Marshall Skidmark?
Yeah, you could say that. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Doing good.
Interesting to hear Steven on our station. I haven't heard him on our station in quite a while.
Quite a coup for your favorite broadcaster here.
I had a question. I heard something about possibly Steven might know something about Pirate TV that's going on. Is that still happening, or do you know anything about that?
Yeah, we've developed the technology for it. We haven't had a lot of response, or demand for it.
Uh-huh.
But we do have the equipment available to set up low power free TV stations.
How far do they reach?
Depending on the configuration, a lot of it's frequency dependent, but typically up to 4 to 5 miles with these directional antennas we use will give you a 150-degree pattern. We're still developing better antennas and stuff, but TV requires a lot more power to go the same distances versus an FM signal.
Uh-huh.
But we... One of the people that works with us is really good at doing tricks with antennas, and we have got some ways of doing it, but it's really pretty. Actually, the transmitters are, in a way, simpler because we just use off-the-shelf cable TV modulators. They're using commercial cable installations, and then we just add it. It turns out their output level fits exactly with these amplifier modules. They're commercially low power modules that are made by Mitsubishi, and we just use those in combination and make great little TV transmitters.
How much do they cost?
Basically, you can put something together. If you do it from kits, we have about $700 or something like
and
that.
And for a radio station?
Same ballpark.
We're talking 60 watts or 100 watts or 10 watts? Or
Are the TVs on VHF or UHF or...?
All of the above.
What about, well, not cable, of course, because eventually, from what I hear, all the UHF and VHF is going to be taken away, and it's all going to be cable. Is that correct, as far as I've been hearing?
Well, UHF is supposed to be where they're going to end up eventually with all the high-def digital.
Oh, I see.
They're supposed to. That was one of the issues that we had brought up when the FCC was considering this LPFM nonsense. Was that one of the demands we were making was saying, well, give us channels 5 and 6 for the FM band, extend the FM band down into those TV channels when the broadcasters under the Telecom Act of 96, when they were given all that spectrum space in the UHF band, they were supposed to give up the VHF, which they have yet to do.
Huh.
And the idea was to expand community radio down into channels 5 and 6. That would give us another 12 megahertz of bandwidth.
And they didn't want to go for that.
No, of course not. Of course, they're going to try to auction it off, I assume.
To who, though? Who's going to?
I don't know.
Nobody wants it. It seems really silly.
Well, that's.
But that's the FCC for you, I guess.
Right, but no, the transmitters we have in the UHF band are from low UHF from the. Channel 14 to about, we go up to about 44, I guess, and then we are able to cover either low VHF or high VHF. So
this is pretty arcane for the average listener. What does it mean in English? You and Skidmark probably understand it, maybe even Joe, but I'll tell you, I'm left behind. If What is that? Suppose some person here says, "Oh, I got $1,000 and wants to set up a TV station. Has it actually been done anywhere in the Bay
Area?"
Yes,
they have. One person's running a Channel 13 in San Francisco.
Pirate Cat TV, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many hours a day?
I don't know. I think they're 24/7. As far as
they run documentaries. They're actually open for people to send them documentaries. Yeah. Last I heard, I interviewed the guy like about a year or so ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
And does it stream as well or not?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if we have a video, I mean, because video has a much higher bandwidth requirements and streaming.
Yeah.
So
I see.
What how's the transmitter sales going? I should ask. And what's the highest wattage transmitter do you have available these days for FM?
FM we go up to within reason. I mean, or unreason, depending on your point of view. Up to 700 or 800 watts.
Wow! We should upgrade. We're at 100 right now, so. But it's we're fairly stable in this little area.
Is anybody actually using such high transmitters anywhere in the country you know of? Or?
Very little. It's mostly for out of the country because where most free stations are operating, they're operating in neighborhoods fairly close to residential, situations, and the higher the power, the more near field interference you're going to have. And
what's the most wattage that any pirate radio station in the U.S. has that you know of, or you, Skidmark, for that matter?
Well, you've got that whole scene in Miami and South Florida where people are running, kilowatt rigs and just blowing the whole band.
This is for Cuba Libre or what?
Haitians, Cubans, whoever. I mean, they're all...
This is a terrorist plot. That's what I'd like to know. I mean, we're on orange alert, right?
That's right.
Well, all right, let's keep that in mind.
Anyway, I'm going to go. I'll probably see you guys in a little while because I'll be covering Dennis's show.
All right, well, don't bring any of that old 60s music, will
you? You know it. You got it.
All right. Thanks.
Cream to the dregs at 8 o'clock. So
see you, Skidmark.
Later. I'll be there.
Okay,
see
cool.
You guys in a little while.
Thanks, Skidmark.
All right, bye.
I'm also in the studio with me again, for those who just tuned in, Stephen Dunifer, Joe Williams. Let me turn to you, Joe, for a minute and kind of not leaving the topic, but bouncing off to the other topic of whatever happened to the anti-war movement. Well, we'll have to wait for this phone call here, I suppose.
In 10 words or less.
Yeah, in 10 minutes. All right. Hey there, you're on Free Radio with celebrities of our time.
This is the DEA. Give us all your drugs.
Oh, well, you first.
Okay, well, come on over to San Jose tomorrow. Maybe we'll talk about that. Hey, it's Jim Losey. How you doing there?
All right, Jim. Well,
I have a question for these guys, actually.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with my normal stuff, but do you guys ever get into the broadband over power line issue and how that might step on the ham users and all, anything like that?
Not really. I mean, I'm aware of the issue, and it's...
Well, I guess I'll just encapsulate it, in 15 seconds, and I'll let you guys keep talking. This is a great show you're having. I actually love all the technical stuff. They want to do broadband over AC power lines. This is in testing in certain areas, and it steps all over ham frequencies. And in cases of all the other communication systems going down, the emergency response is supposed to, the only people whose radios are going to work are hams. So if you look into BPL, Brian Paul Lincoln... broadband over power line. It's a big issue. But, hey, keep it up, guys. You're having a great show here.
Well, before you hang up there, Jim, since I got your email earlier today, any report on the medical marijuana scene in San Jose? And,
I thought I'd call back in once these guys are done. Do you have a few minutes towards the end of the show or not?
Mike, let's give it a try.
Yeah, let me call back once you're finished. These guys, this is a great show you're having. I love it.
Okay.
I'll call back.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
All righty. Phone lines are open, 427-3772, if you want to talk to any of the... three gray hairs in the studio here. We're all ready to give you our wisdom. So let me actually turn off the phone line and open it up. 427-3772. Again, getting back to the former anti-war movement, Joe, when did it die and what killed it here in the area here?
Well, it's interesting to look at it. I mean, people think that demonstrations and marching around in circles are going to end a war. It's not. It hasn't. I think people, that big February 15th thing back when the war started years ago and everybody came out, the largest anti-war demonstrations across the planet, everybody actually thought that that would stop a war. And they were disappointed. And
They all crushed back to television. You know?
That it didn't happen. And what is needed, at least in my opinion, and what has stopped the wars, if you look at Vietnam, it wasn't until the GIs themselves started to refuse orders and fight back internally. And so, at least in my opinion, it's the role of us civilians on the outside is to support those who resist on the inside. That's the way you're going to stop a war, and that's the way it traditionally has happened. But we're not going to stop it by writing letters or marching around in circles. It's just, in my opinion, it's not going to happen.
Stephen, what's your thought on this?
Well, my thought is, subscribing to the thesis that direct action gets the goods. What are we seeing here? Right? Silicon Valley. You've got defense plants all over this bloody place. Why aren't people blockading these defense plants and trying to shut them down? The progressive press gave very little coverage to when the war was about ready to start. The latest Iraq war. In Europe, people were blockading armaments trains and, trying to stop the flow there. We were actually trying to do that. This happened in the Bay Area in the 80s during Central America. People were, blockading the tracks and stuff and doing blockades at Concord Weapons Facility, Port Chicago.
Losing their legs.
Yeah, and Brian Wilson lost his legs, run over by a train.
In fact, Seattle, and two months ago, SDS and others blockaded that was the only place they ever
heard of. The Striker
Brigade,
what people should be doing. If you want to stop the bloody war, stop the war machine. And the war machine's sitting right here. And we got one of the biggest concentrations sitting right here in Silicon Valley. You've got, they're owned now by. Oh, who is it? You've got the Bradley fighting vehicles made right here by FMC, which is now owned by, by the Carlisle Group, I think, now. It's just one of many. I just don't understand why, Joe says.
You're going to be forwarding a list of defense installations to us to, shall we say, reason together with those folks at the defense institutes.
Well,
I don't want to say sabotage them because that would sound like seditious and criminal behavior, even if broadcast on pirate radio. Shrugging your shoulders, officer. Take this man into custody, Joe.
Well, that's just even the same thing here. It says, I don't think you're going to get the numbers needed to do that. It might be a pessimist. I agree with Stephen. Obviously, direct action gets the goods. It's the people who control the levers. If you're going to, it's reminded of like Phil Oakes songs, and the union leaders scream when they try to close the missile plants. You're going to get that same thing happening today. Lockheed's right up the hill. They're doing monthly vigils and, da 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 da. But, they're not going to blockade that road. All the aged peace activists and people involved, they're not the youth up there.
What about the young, strapping students against war up at the university? Surely they will take the bull by the horn.
Well, let's see what they can do. They've done a masterful job of kicking the recruiters off the campus every time they've shown their face. So I would say we need everybody concerned. But I'm more heartened by seeing the resistance coming out of the armed services. I really am. I see a lot more of it now in this what I consider early stages, even though the war's been going on for so long. The numbers, the Pentagon alone admits to 40,000 classified deserters since the year 2000. That's 40,000 people who've either not shown up for deployment, refused orders when they've shown up, and or gone AWOL after they've been deployed somewhere. That's a pretty good number. I'd say, this is the kind of stuff we need to encourage. And I know, Robert, I've talked about Santa Cruz declaring sanctuary for some of these folks. I think that's top of the agenda, whether it's, the same thing the churches are doing for, undocumented immigrants in this country, offering them sanctuary if they're going to try to be deported. It's the same thing we have to do for the GIs rather than sending them to Canada. Why should Canada have to take care of,
And it's harder.
Our resistors. We should be able to feed them, house them, clothe them, and give them sanctuary here in this country. I think it's a failing of, especially in Santa Cruz, that we don't do that.
Well, I know I've repeatedly brought it up to Santa Cruz City Council, and for some reason that great socialist Mike Rotkin has declined to raise the issue. And even that great Green Party guru, Tim Fitzmaurice, has not stepped up to the plate. In fact, none of the candidates running seem to be concerned about the issue. They'll probably tell you that it would violate our city charter and that we need to wait until Christmas or perhaps New Year's or maybe sometime down the road.
Or wait for an opinion from the city attorney or whatever.
Or wait for
the city manager.
Yeah. Right, or as Mike Rodkin said, we can open an office of compassionate use. That's been passed, but not until the Supreme Court rules in on the issue.
Yeah.
I thought that was classic. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me, grassroots news media man. Are you not? You're not really a grassroots. Are you a grassroots? Stephen Dunifer is in the studio. He's. What title should we give you there, Stephen? One-time People's Park activist, maker of free radio assembly kits, Tupa activist, yes? Tupa activist?
Something like that.
Something like that. World traveler. And Joe Williams, who's been working with the draft resistance movement here in Santa Cruz, as well as ignoring street performers for the last 2 years. We hope we can get him back on the streets.
I might be enticed back out there.
Yeah, it would be
I
nice.
Did give some agreement to that, so you'll see me back out in the streets caterwauling.
That would be good. We can use some of your songs. Do you have something you want to say, Stephen?
No, I'm just saying, I mean, in terms of, you know, resisting the war and everything, that, I mean, unfortunately, it seems like our, you know, the choice in this country now has come down somewhere between, you know, an axis between, you know, the Answer Coalition and United for Peace and Justice, and that's our, you know, or in some, and, you know, and MoveOn.org somewhere in the middle, and, you know, if that's our choice and this is what we've come down to, we're really in serious trouble.
We are in serious trouble.
And,
there's no question about it. Huh?
And that's, I mean, I think one thing that's important about the work that we're doing and is that in many ways, I think the opposition to the empire is going to come from outside the empire in terms of what's happening, particularly in Latin America, like in Venezuela, for example, what's happening in Bolivia, where, you know, indigenous movements, you know, have taken power or, you know, moving things in a direction, you know, to, I mean, like Latin America right now, they're, you know, developing, you know, they're moving toward, you know, what's going to be sort of their own sort of, you know, equivalent of the European Union, like the Mercosur or, you know, their own trading bloc, you know, that's moving away from, you know, alliance with the United States. And I think we can do a lot to encourage and help these movements, and that's one way we can, you know, challenge what's happening.
We hope you're a caller from Latin America, but even if you aren't, welcome to Free Radio.
Hola.
Hola.
Hey, I was just wondering, what about these so-called news organizations, you know, that own these big buildings around the city, you know, with the big satellite dish on top? Couldn't you go down and picket them for not really reporting anything useful?
You're talking about like the Sentinel and we actually don't. We have a community TV. We have no television out of Santa Cruz. We have community TV, which actually is probably the, you know, my I occasionally, you know, rampage every so often on community TV. Compliments of Becky Johnson's Club Cruise.
No, I mean like go down to the building in town and like hold signs in front of it.
Which town are you talking about? San Jose or Santa Cruz?
Either one.
Well, okay, the problem is most people listening to this show, with the exception of caller Jim Losey, or maybe you, are local. I mean, who knows? Maybe there are other folks out there. We sometimes have them. But we're really talking to the Santa Cruz community here. At least that's who I'm talking to. I raise those issues. You're in Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
You're the notorious Walt, are you not?
I am.
Welcome to Free Radio again, Walt, after a relatively long absence. Well, you know, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, of course, you know, faithfully supports Republican candidates and so forth.
I've noticed that, yeah.
But, I mean, I wonder, why waste your time with the Santa Cruz Sentinel? I guess, unless you get more media that way, I guess you can, if you get enough people out there who are pissed enough, that's a good idea. What do you think, Joe? Picket the Sentinel?
No, waste of time. I mean, you could do that. You got some spare time to do. But it's just, you know, this whole project is testament of what Stephen's been doing for years. It's like you got to put the communication technology back in the hands of the people, whether it's free radio stations, whether it's websites like, you know, the whole Indie Media Network, whether it's, you know, low-power TV like Stephen's offering. I mean, whatever it would be, it's or do your own newspaper, you know, stuff like that. You need to get... forget the mediation. You need to take it yourself and go directly to the people yourself, trying to get the powers that be to, like, you know, include maybe a little smidgen of like what you want included in the news is a failed strategy, in my
opinion.
Yeah, unless you're willing to go do what people did in the city of Oaxaca and to seize the radio stations or whatever the media outlets were and make them a people's media outlet. So.
Meet you at the Sentinel tomorrow with the appropriate ammunition there, Walt.
I was just wondering how effective you all thought it might be.
No, I mean, that's fine. I appreciate your thoughts on that, but... You've listened to the experts, so now follow us in all things and ignore your own best judgment, okay?
Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, ha yourself.
You know, do what you're willing to do. I think the important thing is to take action. It's not a matter of, like, you know, to sit there and figure out the right strategy. If you take action, you're going to learn more than if you just try to ponder about it. You'll learn from your mistakes, even if you do stuff that other people aren't going to agree with up front. Figure out what works, and you'll figure out what doesn't work fairly quickly, and you'll be able to have bring your own experience to the table then next time.
So, for example.
All right. Well, thank you for your opinion.
Thank you, Walt. And Joe, so what's the most recent thing you've done other than sit around and ponder and pontificate on the air that has given you some new insight into things that you didn't have before in terms of direct action?
I'm encouraged by the fact that a few things have happened within the last year that have encouraged me. One, just personally, has been my involvement with the GI Rights Hotline. We have a network here in Santa Cruz that, based out of the Resource Center for Nonviolence. And so we take calls from, you know, active duty people and people who are thinking about going in the military, maybe high school people who have signed up for the delayed enlistment program or things like that. And we try to figure out ways to get them out. So it's been a very interesting ride becoming a discharge specialist. That's what I consider myself.
Has that increased notably in the last... You haven't really answered my question. Yeah. I mean, I guess you have. I mean,
I'm on the way.
Something has come out of that... I mean, ask you whether that's increased in the last year, but has something come out of that that you sound personally learned from, or?
Well, you learn from every call. You learn how basically fucked up the military is inside, and what some of these people have gone through, especially the women. It gives you added impetus and added motivation to actually oppose this whole mess they got coming down when you're able to put it into real personalized stories. And I won't take up a bunch of time and go into the personal stories, but they're all very interesting and all very, very traumatized people, whether they've been in or they haven't even gone in yet, whether they're fighting recruiters, the recruiters are promising them this and that, or whether they've been in for 5-6 years and they've been stop loss and they're going to be sent back to their third deployment. I mean, it runs the gamut, you know, in between, so it spans the spectrum. So, but what I've seen in addition to that is a renewed interest in, like, the republication of some books that have been long out of print. Soldiers in Revolt by David Courtright is now back in print. Just a masterful analysis of, like, what happened to the Vietnam War fighting machine. Go ahead, take the call.
Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Robert, here's one for you. If your friends are ever going to chance to speak to young people, you know, seeing how the military bears on this conversation, one way to help keep them from enlisting is to let them know about the hijacking of laptop computers and identities because, you know, I did get a letter in the mail from the Department of Veterans Affairs a couple months ago warning me and telling me and apologizing to me, how big of them, about the fact that me and, you know, all these other millions of veterans is... identities could possibly be on the sale in the black market, and they warned me about some particular emails. As a matter of fact, the letter goes as far to say that if you're a veteran, you're receiving these emails to contact them, and I have been receiving these emails that are sort of disturbing, and I haven't contacted them yet. But if I were a young person, I wouldn't want to be handing any of my personal information over, particularly my social security number. Some recruiter is just going to go throw it, you know, in a computer and, you know, not knowing what could and happen to it or where it could go. So I just wanted to call in and say that real quickly. So thanks.
Yay, thank you, Andrea.
One piece of the whole picture right there. It's like, you know, keeping your information out of the hands of the recruiters. I mean, once they're going to get it, you don't know what's going to happen to it, even if you don't sign up eventually. I mean, that's the whole thing about the whole opt-out thing that basically started here in Santa Cruz. Get your parents to, you know, not allow the recruiters to get your names. But back to the whole anti-war stuff. I mean, I'm just encouraged by the stuff that's coming out. I mean, you've got the Sir No Sir thing up on the website. That's going to be that's a very important film.
Playing tomorrow night in the Vets Hall at, what, 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock, yeah.
That's a film that I saw part of when it was doing a benefit at the Del Mar. And then I went to the website, and I was really impressed with the details of the anti-war movement in the military, which, though I've read many different books, I never quite hit upon the book which talked about the anti-war movement in the military, which is, as you pointed
Soldiers
out,
in Revolt.
Core, you know.
Courtright. Courtright, with a C.
And there was also, in Vietnam, there were free radio stations run by GIs as part of the resistance movement as well.
Yeah.
So that's a little known aspect of it. So
Courtright, C-O-R-T-R-I-G-H-T?
I think it's W-R. It might be a W in there.
W-R-I-G-H-T.
Yeah. The Soldiers in Revolt is the name of the book. And it's back in print. Before, like a year ago, it was out of print, and you'll only get a copy for like 80 or 90 bucks. So I'm glad to see that stuff. I mean, I encourage people to read that. The Sir No Sir film is out. You've got, for tomorrow night's event, you have Bob Watata, who's Lieutenant Aaron Watata's father, who's going to be coming in, and they're going to be trying to do a little fundraiser to raise money for his legal defense. So he's one of the first officers to actually refuse orders to go to Iraq, and they're going to court-martial him. They're going to come down on him with a ton of bricks. So, you know, you'll see, you know, see the film and see what they did back then, and be updated as to what's going on now. So you're seeing a lot of the same stuff. The other film to get that's also available on DVD. It just was released to the public maybe 2 weeks ago. So, you know, if you can't come to the Vets Hall, the Sir No Sir DVD. So get that. Another film that comes back from the era is called Winter Soldier. And that just was released on DVD. It played in a bunch of theaters. It never made it down to Santa Cruz, unfortunately. But that just was released in DVD as well. And that's it's kind of the piece that's missing out of the whole Sir No Sir film is the actual hearings. They show the GIs and people, you know, throwing their medals over the Capitol steps. It's like, what led up to that? Why were they there? What led up to that action? It was the Winter Soldier hearings. If you don't know your history about that, go and look it up, because it's fascinating, and we're seeing some of the same stuff. You want to know how to stop the war now is go back and figure out how they stopped it back then.
Yeah, and then I think one thing that would be effective is, I mean, tying it back to radio, is that one of the effective organizing tools during that period were the GI coffee houses, and except near the military bases. And I don't see any reason why people couldn't go out and set up, you know, free radio stations right next to military bases to broadcast the information they need to know about how to resist or how to get out or whatever they need to know. I think it'd be a very effective way to use. I mean, we need to think how we can use these media tools in a creative way within the context of these various movements that are happening. I mean, the same thing. I mean, there's a whole bunch of issues with prisons, and you know, why not set up, you know, free stations that beam into, you know, prisons down like in Chowchilla or wherever, you know, they happen to be. I mean, there's lots of ways we can, you know, use this technology as sort of to multiply the effectiveness of whatever we're trying to do. And it just seems to me that, you know, there are a lot of very, you know, effective things that we could be doing.
You know,
target-rich environment, as you
know. Yeah, a target-rich environment, yes, as I was.
Target-rich environment, yes.
Yeah.
I noticed on the Air America's Randy Rhodes show, which I listened to yesterday, aside from their usual pablum Democratic bullshit, Rhodes was urging people not, you know, soldiers who came in not to show up, which I thought was quite remarkable for her. We have a caller. Hey there, are you a soldier? Are you about to go into military training, perhaps? Caller?
We fight the police department.
Say that again?
I'm a local soldier. We fight the police department. I'm Jim.
Oh, Jim, the local. No, you're not the. You're over the hill, Jim, as they say.
Oh, that's true. I guess. Yeah. Hey, it's one world, right?
No. Yes, but you're over the hill in San Jose, and you're known for your medical marijuana escapades. Have you proposed mailing medical marijuana to soldiers in a way to, should we say, loosen them up over in Iraq?
Well, it is interesting. You know, when people are busy looking up Winter Soldier online, they could also look up that the Israeli military currently uses marijuana to work with PTSD. You know, soldiers that get post-traumatic stress disorder, and it's out there. You know, the Europeans and the people in Israel are a little more open-minded. You know, I know there's a lot of other bad things. People may not like Israel very much at the moment, but it is one good policy that they have.
Uh-huh.
I wish most of the military would do it, because if they all got stoned, you know, maybe we wouldn't have all these problems.
Interesting question. I mean, you would have thought so, right? At least that's the orthodoxy of the. Well, I don't know what to say about that. Although are you stoned right now, sir? What's the story?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm medicated. Well, no. Excuse me. I'm going to make people mad if I say I'm stoned, so I take that back.
You're medicated.
I am using cannabis.
Right.
It is a funny issue in our movement that, you know, some people are purists, and people like me are just more out for attention and trying to get the media. And so, you know, the media, you know, cannabis has too many syllables in it, you know, medical, marijuana.
Your THC partial.
Yeah. But if you just say med pot or,
hemp,
you know, arrest.
Hemp.
I'm sorry?
We have numerous gratuitous comments from other individuals in the studio. Let me point out, Jim, that you are a man who has regularly held an annual medical smokeout. Is that a way of putting it, in order to encourage patients to feel free to medicate publicly and to encourage authorities to show the kind of respect, if not tolerance, or both, that they should show toward that kind of activity?
Oh, yeah, I'm guilty of that. We did barbecues in 2004. We had about 50 people, and we got in the paper. It was kind of nice. And then in 2005, we had a bigger event, and that was 150 people. Now, I'm not going off track too much, but I recently tried to run for city council in Mountain View, and when the Mercury News wrote an article about me in the local political section, they put a picture of me smoking a joint from 2 years ago. It was great. I thought, you know, there's a certain saying in politics that I don't care what you say about me as long as you spell my name right.
And how many votes did you garner in your Mountain View race?
Oh, they wouldn't let me run. I was, it's an issue that you and I should take up sometime because it actually gets, you know that I'm not homeless per se. You know, I'm not like on the streets and, you know, I'm not, you know, I mean, I have a car, and I'm a caregiver for my mom, so I do spend a lot of time in Cupertino now.
Mm-hmm.
I no longer maintain my own grow houses like I used to for the last 3 years. And so, I'm a registered voter in Mountain View, and there's a court case that you may know about called Collier versus Menzel, and it was about some homeless guys in Santa Barbara that tried to register to vote, and they were denied. They said, you can't live in the park. It's illegal to live in the park. You can't register.
This is 1985 or something?
Yeah, it was a great case.
And it was overturned, right. Will Hastings, my one-time boss, actually was one of the attorneys instrumental in that. We have about 10 minutes left, so tell me more, but try to cram it in quickly.
Well, yeah, that's all I was saying about Mountain View is I was trying to run for city council, and the paper ran that picture of me. But as far as San Jose goes, most of the police over here are pretty good, and we recently got the ID card program in March. But the San Jose State Police, they're just known to be oppressive. So I don't know if you know Christine Flora, one of our group members. She was on campus, and she was asleep. That was her crime, is that she had actually gotten a fight with her boyfriend in a different park and had left. And she, you know, later had down on a bench. So at 2:30 in the morning, they didn't just move her along, you know.
In park after closing hours again? No.
Well, it's on campus, and there's no curfew on campus. It's not a curfew issue. It's just that they have a education code 89031 says they can create any stupid rule they want and then arrest you for it.
I think UCSC has some similar.
It's under a state education code. So they all have these local directives and rules and regulations that are all enforced as such. And once they started rousting her for being homeless, you know, she asked just for a warning. She said she would leave, and they did. They said, no, we have to, you know, handcuff you and take you because we also found that you have marijuana.
Uh-huh.
And the newspaper today reported that she had 4 ounces, but it was actually a quarter ounce. It was not a quarter pound.
Did she have a card with her? Would she have a letter from a doctor? Was she, in fact, a legitimate marijuana user?
Yeah, that's a funny story, and I'll try to make it succinct, is that she tried to go to the county for a county card, which gives you an extra protection from arrest. But they turned her away because she was homeless. You're going to lose a lot of homeless issues that run across over here. So if you say you're homeless, Santa Clara County won't give you a public health, you know, card, right? So she instead went to the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Club up there, or OCBC, which isn't quite the same thing. So you know, technically speaking, the police were barely within the law to arrest her. But in our, you know, Chuck, and then I went out there, and we both have.
No, wait a minute. They weren't within the law to arrest her on marijuana charges if she's got a card from a recognized agency, even if it's not on the county.
Well, now listen to what I said carefully. I didn't say it was right. I didn't, and it's not. But actually, they didn't book her and send her to jail or anything like that.
They handcuffed her.
They put her in handcuffs, took her to a holding cell, and then in her case, they took the cuffs off. In our case, when they arrested us, they left the cuffs on for 90 minutes. And we were alone in a holding cell, right? Chuck had his own cell.
This was recently? Or?
Yeah, this was back on August 4th. It was the first time in my life I ever got arrested. So you can understand that, you know, now we're out there. Basically, they're not going to tell us if they're going to change their policy, so we're going to keep testing it. And you know, long story short, this all started with the person sleeping on a bench, and if they just moved her along, none of this.
So wait, what were you arrested for on August 4th?
11357B.
Which is?
Possession of marijuana.
Wait a minute, you had a card?
Yeah, the guy wouldn't look at it. He threw it down on the table that we'd set
up
a table.
Which authority arrested you?
I'm sorry?
Who? Which California Highway Patrol?
No, this is all about the San Jose State University Police. Not even San Jose Police are getting pretty good on
this.
Now,
you've got some, why don't you call some fancy ACLU drug policy marijuana attorneys over here in Santa Cruz. They got a whole bunch of high-powered characters doing I don't know what on the third floor at Pacific and Cathcart and ask them to take your case. It sounds like they're violating both SB 420 and Proposition 215.
Yeah, well, they're definitely violating one narrow part of SB 420 for sure, and it's amazing. But you know, I had forgotten that they were over there. I'm going to check with them. I did call the ACLU hotline up in San Francisco, and I was really kind of dismayed to find out that the guys that answered didn't know the law, and they kept telling me that it was okay for the cops to arrest me. And I'm like, but guys, 11362.7, read it. And they're like, no, you don't have an issue. And I never got a call back.
What about the anti-war movement, Jim, now that let's bring it up back to the subject here that we're talking about. What's happening in San Jose around anti-war movements? Are there
I think I could tie the two together, actually. I want to tell you, I'll try to do it quickly, where some of this came from. You know, I've been reading, you probably know who Bill Kunstler is, who's a pretty well-known lawyer.
He's dead, isn't he?
He's defended the flag burners. And, you know, he's starting to make sense, I got to admit.
Kunstler is dead, right?
Yeah, he died, I think, in 95.
Right.
But they published a book called The Emerging Police State that's a collection of his letters and speeches.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they did, like, an FOIA request and got his FBI transcript of his speeches, and then they published that. And he did a speech on 7th Street in San Jose back in 1970. And he got up there and he said, you know, I guess I'm breaking federal law to tell you guys that you shouldn't, you know, that you shouldn't join the war, but I'm standing here and telling you that you shouldn't join the war. And he goes on and makes this great speech, and it was at 7th, it was, the address was 7th Street. Now, there is no such address today, but the police department is 377 7th Street. So this is actually being done in a historical context of the free speech movement, which used to exist there.
Wait, Jim, what is being done? I'm missing the point here.
Well, the illegal arrests.
Of
us.
Oh, that's where you were arrested.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought, yeah. Well, Tina was originally sleeping on campus.
Now, what, you were arrested, you were walking, how did the police happen to find the marijuana on you, anyway?
Oh, well, we were arrested at a protest. We went out to protest the original arrest of Tina, because
this gets worse and worse. So this woman was arrested for being on a bench on campus and having marijuana handcuffed and taken into custody.
Yeah,
And you were arrested for protesting her arrest. What, were you throwing rocks at these poor police officers? What were you doing?
I'm evil. I'm evil. Here's what I did.
What did you do?
I think you'll find this funny. Have we got, like, a minute for me to describe this?
You have about a minute, yes.
Okay, you're going to like this. I set up a table, Chuck and Tina came out there with me, and we had video cameras, and they also took my video camera and kept it for 3 days. That was interesting, but long story shorter, I set up a table and I had one bag of real marijuana, four bags of oregano and bay leaves, and I also had this book, The Emerging Police State, with another bag stuffed in there. Now, when the police took everything, they didn't take the book. And also, they left my pipe in my pocket. I had cargo pants that have a lower pocket, and they forgot to search that. So when, you know, once they came on the scene and they made it clear that they were going to start writing us a ticket, some supervisor came out, cuff them, take them to holding cells thing, and all I know is 90 minutes later, you know, I was released, and I'm still in pain from it. Actually, you know, there is going to be something on that. But you know, I know I talk fast and skip through things, but it's kind of funny that when
How long were you held in custody, Jim?
90 minutes.
Are you charged with anything?
11357B, but, you know, possession of marijuana. But we know that they're going to drop that.
Could be a fat lawsuit for some sucky attorney who wants to make a little money.
You know, we're already talking to some attorneys that we think might help us with that.
When
but if anybody else wants to jump in, they're welcome. But let me just finish off with one little point, is that when I came back out, they did not take the book. They took the bags of oregano and the marijuana. They actually sent the oregano to the crime lab for testing, if you can believe this.
Uh-huh.
But they left the book, so when I came out, there's still a bag of pot there in the book. And I gave it to Tina. So right after they arrested me, I distributed marijuana in front of the police.
Now, wait a minute. Where was the bag of pot? Was still on the sidewalk or something?
No, it was stuffed inside the book, The Emerging Police State.
I had
that book on the table.
And so no one was interested enough in the book to get the booty.
Well, the cops aren't going to pick up that book. It says The Emerging Police State. They didn't want to touch that.
Yeah, but what about, you know, citizens wandering by?
Tina was not arrested. She was not actually in possession. So she was, you see, the police don't want to take the trouble of folding up our table, right? So they left Tina, and Tina kept the protest going for an hour. And it was only
did
like
it
about,
grow as a consequence of this arrest?
Say that again?
Did it grow as a consequence of the arrest?
Did what grow?
The protest.
Well, you know, we're going to find out tomorrow. We've been doing it very subtly and just going out and sort of testing things. And tomorrow, you know, I hope a lot of people show up. I've been putting this on Indie Bay and somebody else.
I haven't seen it on, it hasn't been put on Santa Cruz. So it's on Indie Bay, the protest?
Oh, that's right. It's only here for South Bay. Maybe I'll go post that on Santa Cruz tonight, unless you want to do that.
You might do that. And what, where and when and how? Give it to us briefly here.
It's at San Jose State University campus, and I'm just going to say the address. It's 377, and it's on South 7th Street. It's the University Police Department. And that's in San Jose. Now, the protest goes from 4 to 7, and I'll repeat that address at the end here, but protest goes from 4 to 7, but we're going to go out there and probably be smoking out there by 4:20, and we'll see what happens.
And,
at 5 o'clock, there's a patient training, and I do have a guy that's going to help me market this on campus and try to attract students to come to the training.
Is school in session over there?
Yeah, it just started this week.
Okay, and do you have a phone number for people to call if they want more information?
I sure do. It's 650-669-4175.
One more time.
Yeah, let me do the address again, too. The address for University Police Department on the San Jose State campus is 377 South 7th Street, and that's in San Jose. And my phone number is 650-669-4175. And then, of course, there's Area 420 is back up, area420.com.
Okay, and it'll be you'll have some updates on that.
Yeah, a lot of the story is on there, actually, right now, and all the details are on area420.com.
Well, for those of us who like to sit around and talk about this, the anti-war and the free radio movement, rather than do anything about it, and I'm not mentioning any names here, I encourage you to call in on Sunday and give us a report on what happened tomorrow and all the people that should have been there weren't.
Will do. You never know. I think there's going to be a good turnout because
I think you're right.
We're on ASA and a couple other big websites like Indie Bay.
I mean, it sounds great. I'm glad you're out there doing it. I mean, you're doing exactly what Joe was suggesting. You're getting out there and learning from your experience and also encouraging other people to say that they can see that they can challenge unjust authority.
Yeah, and, you know, one last comment. What's scary is this is not the DEA. This is your local police doing
yes,
this.
Yes,
yes. Yeah, okay.
How well we know. Yeah.
So, hey, great show, Robert.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate your calling
there.
And calling again on Sunday.
Yeah, hey, thanks to all your guests in there. You guys are great. Thanks.
Hey, thank you. We've reached the end of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're going to be listening to 3 hours of canned music instead because some people insist on having long musical shows. Well, I'm not going to criticize other people, even those who are absent and forcing us to listen to such canned music.
You would have been out of here a long time.
All right. I'm hearing his child is sick. Okay, fine. All right. No. Actually, Uncle Dennis got some good music. I just always feel sad when I got guests in the studio who have many more things to say. But let's give you a moment or two to conclude, guys. Anything on any of the subject we've mentioned so far you wish to sound off on? Any points for further information where people can go afterward to get more info?
Well, I mean, particularly if people are interested in
Stephen Dunifer speaking,
what we're doing in Latin America, they can go to the Radio Tupa site, which is radiotupa.org. We encourage people to get involved. For people here who have particularly translation skills, we have a bunch of documents and need translating for our work in Mexico and various other places. If people want to help support it, there we have a couple web streams there that of streaming video that a video that we have talking about the project and also about one of the stations down in Chiapas that we've helped set up. We'll be back down there again in September working in three different locations in Mexico to help set up stations. And we just encourage people to get involved. I mean, there's lots of ways to, lots of places to put your energy and, feel like you're being constructive and doing something. I just encourage people to, just don't sit there, do something. I mean, it's there's plenty to do.
And you'll feel better once you did.
Yeah. As they say, the agitator is the part of the washing machine that gets the job done,
Here, here. What about you, Joe? You got any agitation here?
Always. Always. I would just encourage people here locally, at least the folks listening here in Santa Cruz, to you're not going to get the city council, as Robert's pointed out. They're going to lay down on the issue and trying to grant sanctuary. So if you're listening to this out there, you need to go to your pastors, your priests, your rabbis, your imams, what have you, and get them to declare sanctuary. There was a Methodist church up in Seattle that just did that. For another resistor, there's a church out in the Midwest, I forget where exactly, that declared is actually harboring and giving sanctuary to an undocumented immigrant activist who they want to deport. And so
it wouldn't hurt to call the city council at 420-502 and tell
them, Portland,
for example, you know, their police.
We're not going to preclude any actions here. Just we're talking about my advice about the most efficacious type of activity.
Right.
At the same time, if you want to come out and support stuff locally, show up at the film tomorrow. You know, if you're the kind of the Santa Cruz activist just wants to throw money at things, then, you know, support the Veterans for Peace people, support the GI Rights Hotline, and support the war resistors up in Canada. Go to their website and check out what's going on up there.
And their website is?
Warresistors.ca. And check out what they're doing and figure out why the hell we're not doing that down here. And figure out what you can do to make that happen. So all these groups that are supporting the GI resistors internally, those are the people I think you need to support.
Okay, and if for more information for a local number they can call, Joe?
Well, I would say call the Resource Center and ask for the GI Rights Hotline. I'd be happy to put you in touch with the local Veterans for Peace chapter. And if you want, I can put you in touch with the War Resister people up in Canada.
Number for the Resource Center for Nonviolence or Inaction, as I've often said. Hopefully in this case not, is?
Call our GI Rights Hotline then, Robert. 359-0202.
359-0202.
Yeah.
Okay,
We'll see. We'll be having a table. The GI Rights Hotline people will have a table at the event tomorrow night at the Vets Hall, 7 o'clock. The Sir No Sir showing. So
check it out. I'll probably be there, so you can wave at me, give me large checks, and so forth. I'll be back again on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning. If you want to catch me between shows, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833. The show's archived at huffsantacruz.org, and I'm hoping you can jump on board again at 9:30. 9:30 to 1, we're going to be doing this longer version on Sunday. That's it. And there's a lot more to say. We'll say it then. We want a station ID from you, Stephen. Give us a... instruct Bob on how to do that.
Instruct. Stephen Dunifer, you're listening to 101 FM.
Okay. All right, this is Stephen Dunifer. You're listening to 101.1 FM, Freak Radio, Santa Cruz, as we used to say, turn on, tune in, and take over.
Hear, hear. All right, and thanks for being with me on Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Bye-bye. When the music
takes over. When the music's over, turn out the lights, turn out the lights, turn out the lights. Well, the music is your special friend. Day and sound fire, it intends. Music is your only friend. Cancel my subscription to the resurrection. Send my credentials to the house of detention. I got some friends inside. Face in the mirror won't stop. The girl in the window won't drop. A feast of friends, alive she cried, waiting for me. Sing into the bed sleep. I want to hear. I want to hear the scream of the butterfly. Getting tired of hanging around. Waiting around with our heads to the ground. I hear a very gentle sound. Very near yet, very far. Very soft, yeah, very clear. come today, come today. What have they done to the earth? What have they done to our fair sister? Ravaged and plundered and ripped.